President Bush emphasized the importance of bipartisanship in his address to a joint session of Congress last night. The speech gave him an opportunity to win the Democratic approval he'll need to enact his tax cut, the central feature of his budget plan.
40 years ago, and then 20 years ago, two presidents, one Democrat, one Republican, John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan, advocated tax cuts to, in President Kennedy's words, get this country moving again. They knew then what we must do now. To create economic growth and opportunity, we must put money back into the hands of the people who buy goods and create jobs.
Joining me now are NPR's Cokie Roberts and Ken Herman, Washington correspondent for the Austin American-Statesman. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Bob.
The president talked about the need for bipartisanship. Cokie, how was his speech received among the Democratic and Republican lawmakers in the House chamber?
Well, he went to the House chamber with no bad things hanging over him and a sense that he had reached out to the Congress. He started by saying kind things about the Congress, and he didn't really say anything to cause them to be upset with him. He couched all of his programs in terms that were things that pretty much anybody could be for. He didn't bring up some of the most controversial things that he is for. And I think that it was basically a very smooth sail for Democrats in the House and the Senate, but that's a speech that's not dealing with the programs.
The president spent the most time pushing his tax cut, saying it was affordable, and immediately afterward, Democrats took issue with his budget math. They didn't use the words fuzzy math, did they? What is their concern, Ken?
Well, we actually did see the words fuzzy math, I believe, in a Democratic National Committee release, but basically, what we have set up here is a battle between two concepts that Americans tend to want to believe. One is you can have it all. You can spend, you can save, you can cut, you can raise. And then you have the loyal opposition saying something your mother told you, which is, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
The president also tried to change public expectations on using the federal budget surplus to pay down the national debt. Cokie, what was he trying to do, and can he pull it off?
Well, I think that it's so complicated here. What the national debt, of course, is a series of bonds that are out there, treasury notes, and some of them don't mature for a period of time. And so it would cost actually a premium to pay them off now as opposed to when they mature. So what he's saying is we'll pay off as much of the debt as is available to be paid off now. Now, this is a pretty complicated argument. But again, as Ken says, you can make that argument in your own house. You don't pay a note before it's due if it has a premium on it, unless there's some reason to. So I think that all of these arguments can be brought down to kitchen table arguments. I think that the real problem the president has is that in poll after poll, a number of people say that a tax cut is not the highest, by any means, highest priority on their agenda. Now, he would argue, well, they're asked, would you prefer a tax cut or to pay you, or for your mother to get her Medicare? And when it's put that way, you say you want your mother to get her Medicare. But he still has a sell to do. But he started it last night, and I think he's likely to succeed.
Some lawmakers familiar with the president's budget, which is out today, say it would increase money for defense, education, medical research, and housing, but hold down spending for NASA, agriculture, transportation, and the homeless. He didn't mention spending cuts in his speech, did he, Ken?
No. When you have a free paid political advertisement, as these speeches tend to be, you talk about what you want to talk about. Several of the hot button issues were not mentioned. He did not talk about abortion at all, which is an issue that's been a peculiar one for him. Everyone knows where he stands on it. He chooses not to make it a major issue because he feels like there's not going to be much major change in it, so he's not going to spend much political capital on it. But we'll see today when the budget document comes out sort of more broad parameters of what he's not going to spend more money on.
He barely mentioned campaign finance reform. Did that surprise you,
Cokie? And in fact, what he said, the text said the words campaign finance reform, And when he actually delivered it, he said campaign reform, not finance. Earlier in the day, in a briefing at the White House by a high-level government official, he said that the president would say, mention campaign finance reform, but not for long.
Well, maybe that's good. Maybe he wants to have more reform than just finance.
Well, he did mention electoral reform. And, of course, there is a tremendous push for that in the post-Florida days. And you heard the Democrats talk about it as well. But obviously that is not something that's high on his agenda. And he's at least gave it lip service, which is more than some of the supporters of campaign finance reform could have expected in the past.
Ken, you've covered George Bush for 7 years. What about his style? Is that the George Bush that you're familiar with?
Yeah, that speech last night for George W. Bush was as good as it gets and frankly, as long as it gets. It was competent. It was confident. He operates from a broad series of philosophical parameters, and he's confident speaking within those. He doesn't like listening to a 49-minute presentation, much less giving one. He is notoriously impatient. At 49 minutes, he broke the existing family record by 1 minute for first speech to a joint session of Congress. His father's speech was, I believe, 48 minutes in 1989. That would have been, that set now sets the standard for whoever the next Bush is that goes into the family business here.
Yesterday at the White House, though, the president had just practiced the speech, and it was 35 minutes long without applause. And the official said, that's a long time to stand up there without fidgeting, much less not massacring the English language. So this official, who knew the mind of the president very well, obviously this was a not-for-attribution briefing, said that he was a little nervous about it.
Cokie, that was Mrs. Bush, wasn't it?
Well, does this get Bush back into the spotlight, or are we going to hear more about former President Clinton before the end of the day?
Well, I think his strategy, if he wants to really grab the spotlight, is start quickly issuing some questionable pardons, and we'll keep him in the headlines all the time. But no, I think the battlefields are clearly set now. We'll find out how soon the honeymoon ends. There's some polling data that indicates there was a honeymoon with the American people, but it might have lacked some passion, something you don't want to lack in a honeymoon, and we'll see where it heads from here. There's math questions to be answered.
You know, it's interesting, though, in those polls, the same differences that you saw during the election are showing up in the post-election polling, which is that there's some real gender differences here. So that when it gets, for instance, to tax cuts, men are for them and women put them lower on their priority list. And so a lot of the language, I mean, George Bush has been so aware of this since the minute he threw his hat in the ring or before that. A lot of the language of last night's speech was aimed again at making people, particularly female people, see him as an inclusive person, a person who was concerned about Americans, not only his Leave No Child Behind, but many places in terms of race relations, dealing with the poor, all meant for the ears of women whom he will have to convince if he's going to get his program through.
Thank you both very much. NPR's Cokie Roberts and Ken Herman, Washington correspondent for the Austin American Statesman.